Welcome back to the Laravel podcast. This is your host, Matt Stauffer. Today, I'm going to be talking to someone whose name I struggle with, Antonio Ribeiro. I'm so bad at it. He's the master of Stack Overflow, Laravel, and much more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Laravel podcast, season three. I'm your host. I want to say I'm your favorite host, but I'm your only host, so that'd be kind of cheating, like when you only have one kid and you say I'm your favorite kid. I'm your host. I'm one of your hosts. I'm the only host. See? Matt Stauffer. That's me. I'm the guy talking to you. Joining me is someone who a lot of you have probably learned from at some point in your life, but you often haven't associated that you're actually learning from him. This is the master of Stack Overflow Laravel. That's what's going on here. And I think a lot of people have not recognized that this is actually a thing. We'll get into this in a bit. I also, his name is in Portuguese is pronounced in such a way that I'm going to totally massacre it. So I'm going to say it. And then literally the first thing I'm going to ask him to do is say it the way it's actually supposed to be said. So Antonio Ribeiro. See, it's totally fine. So say your name for us. And also what I'd love for you to do is just give us a pitch of who are you? What are you about when you meet someone for the first time? What do you tell them about what you do? And then where are you? And then I'll get started in asking some questions.
Hi, Matt. My name is Antonio Ribeiro.
Howdy. That's how badly I pronounced it.
The second time you said it, it was really cool. Yeah, yeah.
It's really a little better.
I'm from Brazil originally. I work in Brazil, and I work for a company outside Brazil. But I lived in Europe for 4 years or 5 years. I don't remember exactly how much time. I live in a city. Everybody knows, I think everybody knows, it's Rio de Janeiro. It's mm-hmm. as difficult as my name to say.
Rio de Janeiro.
Exactly, yeah. I work for the Brazilian government.
Okay.
Specifically, the state legislature in Rio. So I'm a public servant. I do 6 hours per day of public serving. Mm-hmm. Work, and after hours, of course, I do some a lot of work. I work for another company now. I'm not exactly working for them, but I'm available for them. I love to program, and that's why I got into Laravel so quickly and maybe had some success in Stack Overflow. So I started my programming life when I was 12, I think, in Switzerland, in a big department store, working with computers that was in the store, and I was like amazed about computers. I got a job when I was 12.
You got a job 13. When you were 12 years old working on computers.
Yeah, not working on computers. I got a job delivering groceries for a store.
Uh-huh. Okay.
To buy a computer.
Oh, nice. Okay, I was going to say, that's still impressive. But man, you're getting right into it here. You've heard this before, and you know that I'm going to ask about your whole background. But let me pause for just 1 second, because what I want to make sure I have is, I want to have context for people to know why is that I'm talking to you. And like I said, the whole point of this version of the podcast is to get to know the people who everybody knows, but maybe they don't know who they are, and also to get to know the people that nobody knows, but they might have benefited from. And I think you're in the second box. And so the reason I originally met you is because I started learning Laravel, and I don't know if you and I started at the same time or not. So actually, before I go any further, what version of Laravel was it when you first started getting really involved?
3.2. Yeah, 3.2.
Yeah. So you showed up there just a little bit before I did. And so I remember in the early days, and especially in the middle days, every time I'd come across everything in Stack Overflow, you would always be the answer. And it's just consistently over and over. And I'm looking at this, and you have 59,000 reputation on Stack Overflow. And if anybody doesn't know, it's a very, very, very large number of answers. And who knows how good their ideas are here of how many people he's reached. But it is telling me that he's reached 3.7 million people with his answers in Stack Overflow.
And, wow. And I didn't know that.
Right. And the large number of them are in Laravel. His top tag is in Laravel, and then he's got Laravel 4. He's got 1,000 posts in Laravel that he's interacted with, or that he's created. So there's a lot There's a lot going on here. He's in the top 0.3% in Stack Overflow. And I'm only saying that not because that makes you worthwhile or not worthwhile, but that was the reason that we originally connected. Now, since you've made a couple repositories, in a couple packages for Laravel, the most recent ones that have come up have been your tracker, the stats tracker, and then the test dashboard. Is that what it's called? I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Yeah. I'm calling it TDDD now.
Oh, it's got a new name. Okay,
so TDDD. Yeah, TDDD.
Got it. And then also the one I have tweeted out a little bit recently is that you have version, which basically allows you to pull the version of your Laravel application into your app based on any number of criteria, one of which being the Git tag, which I was super interested in. But it seems like you got a lot more in those. Do you even know how many packages you have?
No, I'm not sure, really.
So you've created many...
I have, I think, 5 or 6 really popular packages, but I have like 150 repositories
exactly.
in my account, so I don't know.
Yeah. All right, so you're big on Stack Overflow. You've got a lot of packages, and you also are Twitter presence here and there. But just like a few of the other people we've talked to so far, you're not someone, at least in the U.S. and the Europe, where everybody knows you and everybody knows your name. I don't know the Brazilian Laravel community quite so well. So is that different either in Brazil or Rio? Do you guys have a really strong community there that you're really invested and involved in, or are you kind of solo with this?
Yeah, I'm kind of solo because it all started for me in Stack Overflow.
Okay, and got it.
In English, which is not exactly my a language I used to speak. Uh-huh. So I decided to go deep in this Stack Overflow thing, but it was way before I discovered that I was ranking on Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
So I did not really contacted people in the Brazilian community of Laravel community, but we got in touch in the IRC.
Okay. Cool.
When Taylor was still very frequent, I don't know if it's there now because very frequent now. Yeah. So I know some people of the Laravel community, the laravel.com.br, which is the website. But I just saw that they kind of let it down.
Oh, so yeah.
Unfortunately, the last post in the website is like
2016.
2016, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of these days, someone asked me if I was going to the Laracon, Brazil, Laraconf, mm-hmm. Brazil, actually. And I didn't even know it was happening. So
right.
I just say I'm sorry.
Yeah. So you're relatively disconnected. I want to get your whole backstory, but I want everybody to have the context for what we're talking about here. So do you use Laravel in your day job?
Yes, of course. Everything we do for the government now mm-hmm. is done in Laravel.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Mostly everything. I'm a lead of a very small group of developers.
Yeah, yeah.
And we work primarily in Laravel. Okay. And Vue.js.
Oh, very cool. Did you get in Vue.js pretty early last summer, or is it something you're jumping into more recently?
No, pretty early.
Okay, cool.
Almost when Taylor started to talk about it, I got in. Yeah.
Very cool. It's interesting because I just Googled your name so that I could throw your website into the show notes and found that you had done an interview on Laravel News, which I try to read those beforehand so that I can make sure I'm not covering the same territory. And I had never read that you'd done that. I had no idea that happened. Yeah. So excuse me, I didn't do the research I should have done. But that's fine because I still have plenty of questions and curiosity. So, okay. So you are doing Laravel in your day job, but you're also doing some stuff on the side. There's various levels of folks who you're working with. The Stack Overflow was, you're in on Stack Overflow English early. You're somewhat connected, but it's been a little while with the Laravel Brazil community. And one of the reasons I asked that is because I saw my book has been translated into two or three languages, and Brazilian Portuguese is one of them. And I was pretty surprised by that because that takes a pretty big commitment for somebody in the community who have decided that it's a group they want to target. So I was wondering if there was just some huge, you know, Brazilian Laravel community that I wasn't aware of. So it sounds like at least there at some point was, but it may, at least the one in Rio might have gone a little quiet for a little while.
Yes, I think the community is too big, too large, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But they are not very connected. Mm-hmm. I think they are more connected in the PHP community than the Laravel community.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so before I go to your life story, I want you to give me a pitch real quick on the TDDD. And then if there's any other one package that is just really your favorite package, that your favorite contribution level, well, I don't know if stats track or something else, but first tell me about TDDD as if I'd never heard of it before. And then do you have any other packages that you really love and you want to share with everybody?
Well, TDDD is it's becoming an app actually. So it's an app for helping people do TDDD. So basically you are writing tests. If you write tests before or during or after you are coding, doesn't matter, of course. But you can use it to help you test your app during development. So you make a change in your code, it will run all your tests. If you do a change in one of your tests, it will run that test particularly. Mm-hmm. So it's basically that. So, but we have some other things. It's those which are it is able to link all the lines of your failures. So you can click a link and it will open your PHP Storm or your Sublime Text or VS Code. Doesn't matter what editor you are using. Now I just added code coverage for it to it.
Oh, cool.
So you can also see the code coverage that they are. It's basically that. So you can add as many projects as you have. You can use whatever code editor you have. If you have a project which you have tests in JavaScript, in PHP, and any other thing, you can add as many suits you want to add on it. So it's very mm-hmm. flexible. It's handy. I use it all the time. I think it's the package that I'm using the most these days.
Okay, very cool. So is this an app where you think that if anybody's doing TDD in Laravel, they should just be using TDDD, or is it more for specific context and not for others?
No, you can. Everybody can use it. Everyone can use it. If you are doing TDD in Laravel or in PHP, pure PHP. Or you can use it in Ruby. It's very open, very. And I think it's a good one to use because I think a Freak has a package almost like it, but it's for the command line.
Okay.
The difference for me it's that I keep a monitor. I have three monitors here. I keep mm-hmm. a monitor with it. And when I'm coding, I'm looking at the monitor and seeing if anything broken in the code that I'm writing. That's very handy.
That's really cool. And I asked for one other package that is really big for you. I know you've been working on version recently, but I also know that StatsTracker is one of your more popular ones. If you had one more of your packages that you think people should check out, which one's top of your brain?
I like very much Google 2FA, but I think there are other options and people are using Authy, which you can blend to Laravel very easily. Mm-hmm. But I think the firewall, it's a package that people should look at.
Yeah, I use firewall.
You use firewall?
Yeah.
This firewall? Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I had basically written a really crappy version of Firewall, and then you came out with Firewall, so I just switched over to using your package. So,
yeah.
So can you give like a high level introduction to what Firewall is?
Firewall is basically something you put in front of your app to protect it. It's like a real firewall. The difference, of course, is that you cannot rely on Firewall for everything. But you can rely on it for things like someone trying to exploit your app. A firewall, of course, will be better on that. But if someone tries to hit one route 50 times, it will warn you. about that. Mm-hmm. And you can, and it can block the person or block the country. It's very, very flexible in this way too. And it, I like it because one of these days I found someone in Denmark trying to yeah. Exploit one of my endpoints. So it's cool.
Nice. Yeah, and some of the things that Firewall can do is, so it does the blacklists and whitelists. It, you know, it allows you to block people really easily. It also does some detection, like you were saying. It does some intelligent detection to find people causing problems. But it's also got a couple other cool features. One of the things I liked was you can basically send everybody in the whole site to a coming soon page except for people with whitelisted IP addresses. So there's a couple other tools that are in the same vein of, you know, Firewall, but are actually not just for security purposes. Also, some of them are for access purposes as well. So, and it's really, really fast, right? Like, I think I remember looking at some other packages and they would add 50 to 100 milliseconds. And this, your GitHub page says 10 milliseconds, which is really basically negligible on most sites. All right. So I have given a little bit of the high level introduction, who you are and what people may have heard of you. Or they may have seen your stuff before and might not have always known. We're about to jump into the history of who you are. But I wanted to point one thing out, which is that for the longest time, I had difficulty remembering what your name was because you have an I in front of it in your Twitter handle. And so it says Antonio. And yeah. I would always think his name is Ian Antonio, or but then I remember there's a Carlos somewhere in there. I'd be like, is it Ian Carlos? And it always had a lot of trouble. So I just wanted to, I've always wanted to tell you the I has been so confusing to me. All right. So
sorry.
Back to where we started. No, no, you're fine. You're fine. So you said when you're 12 years old, you were in, did you say Switzerland? And you were living there at the time. And you got into computers, and so you got a job delivering stuff so that you could have enough money to. But what I'm curious about is, how did you actually get into the computers in the first time? And I don't want to go too far down this road, but I will mention that, like, you there's a little more gray in your beard than there is my beard. Maybe I'll just say that. So at this point, you were not discovering the same computers that I was discovering when I was 12 years old. So what did it look like for you to learn about and get interested in computers, and what were those first computers you were getting interested in at that point?
Yeah, Commodore VIC-20 was the first computer I touched with my own fingers.
Okay,
it was, and people were talking very much about Commodore 64, I think. I wasn't able to use one. But after some time, I got back to Brazil. I went to Swiss. I went first to France. I was there for some time. Then I got back. I got to Switzerland, some cities in Switzerland, and then I got back to Brazil. And I decided to do a course. I was like 18, I think.
Okay.
And then I think I was really amazed by Apple computers and the PC, the first PCs in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was that. I think very early in computing here in Brazil, I think I got catched by them.
Yeah, yeah. So at that point, there were actually classes that you could be taking. You weren't having to just teach on your own, right?
Yes, mostly, yes. And okay. and that was my whole life. Because first I tried to try a course to get classes, and it was not very good because I was already reading in a lot about computers, about programming.
Right.
And then I got to a class of a friend of my father, which basically gave me a book and a book and a computer and told me to learn by myself.
Oh, so cool.
I was basically self-taught me the whole life.
So was that Commodore 64 that you were working with at that point then?
No, at that point, no. It was an Apple II.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I assume you were learning how to use the machine, but were you learning coding like AppleScript at that point, or what were you learning at that point?
Basic, I think. No, at first it was basic, and then I got to DBase. Do you know DBase?
No, never heard of it.
Oh yeah, it's like a language for querying databases.
Okay.
It was not exactly a language. And then there was Clipper. I think Clipper is a little bit more popular than D-Bass.
I've never heard of Clipper either. Huh.
But yeah.
D-Bass and Clipper. Okay.
Yeah. So those were the languages that I started to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then after doing this course, I went to a company kind of to work for them, but work and learn. It was more like a friend than a boss.
Huh.
So there we started to work with C++, not C++ yet,
C++ right.
Before. So we were building a translation system in Clipper and C.
Translation meaning translating languages.
Exactly. It was trying to translate from six different languages, but it was like changing words. Not really.
It didn't understand syntax. It just replaced one word with another.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Basically
got it.
That. Yeah. And after we started to translate to switch sentences and idioms, things like that.
And you understood how to do the parsing well enough to write all that? Were you actively involved in writing those translation layers?
Yeah, it was not exactly a parsing. It was like get one word, try to get the meaning in the sentence and just switch words.
Okay,
it's really really rudimentary, I think.
Mm-hmm. So in that. How soon, I'm trying to get all the age ranges here. So you said when you got to Brazil, you were taking courses. So was that university when you got back home?
No, I was still in school, in high school.
So was this job doing the translation layer? Were you also still in school at that point, or was this out of school?
Yes, yes. I was working and studying at the same time, always.
Man. Okay. Yeah. So what was your degree that you were seeking?
Yeah, I was some years after I got to do in university here, so I have a degree in computing.
Basically. Okay, got it. Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like computers have been a thing for a very long time. I mean, the first thing you mentioned about when you were younger was getting to computers when you were 12 years old. I know that you're interested in photography, and I feel like you've mentioned dancing at one point, so I know you have some other things. Are those going as far back as computers as well, or have you sort of always been... computers is one of your biggest hobbies, like since the early days?
No, both dancing and photography are things that I started like 5 years ago.
Oh,
eight
okay.
years ago
Got
eight
it.
Years ago photography and 5 years ago dancing.
Okay. So
I met my wife at the dance classes, so
oh
we are,
very cool.
Yeah, we are 7 years together, so 7 years of dancing and 8 years of photography.
That's amazing. What sort of dancing was it?
Samba. Do you know samba?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do it, but I know what it is.
Yeah. Samba, rock and roll. We call it differently here, but it's like rock and roll.
Okay.
And salsa.
Got
it's
it.
Very much new. No.
My wife is a dancer, and I'm one of the worst. But I'm one of the worst dancers of all time. She's like a professional dancer, and I'm a clumbling, bumbling idiot. So it's a very fun pair. So I know the words, even if I don't know how to do anything. So that's very cool.
Wow,
okay,
very cool.
So 5 to 10 years of photography, 5 to 10 years of dancing. But this computer thing goes the whole way back there. Was it weird that you were 12 and you were into computing and it wasn't as much of a cultural phenomenon? I mean, a 12-year-old kid that's into computers today is just no big deal. Being a 12-year-old in the 90s, for me, was a little bit weird. I get the sense that you were in the 12-year-old more in like the late 80s or something like that. Was it culturally strange or in Switzerland where you were? Was this a normative thing? Was it normal in Brazil? Was it weird in Brazil? Like, what culturally was it like being that into computers that young?
I think it was completely different because... different for people to know that I was excited about something nobody knew at the time.
Right.
And it was very, very expensive. It was, in Brazil, a computer, it was like buying a car or two, I think.
Yeah.
So my mother didn't want me really to go to that path because she didn't believe very much in the power of a computer.
Right.
But I had to be an engineer or something like that.
Yeah.
So I asked her to buy me a computer, and she basically said, no, of course not.
Of course not. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So what was it that interested you so much about computers when you were 12? Like, what was the thing that you saw, or the possibilities you saw, or did you see a specific thing happen and you say, I want to be able to do that? Like, what was it?
I think that it was exactly that, the infinite possibilities.
You were able to figure that out.
Yeah.
That early.
I think so. I think so, because for a lot of time in that department store, I was just trying to figure out what that thing was about. So I was able to play on it and to write things and to create small programs. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool.
Yeah. I learned BASIC. But you said when this was the Commodore VIC 64, VIC something, I don't know. what were you writing in at that point?
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. 20.
Yeah, 20. So what were you writing in at that point when you were really getting started?
I don't remember. I was just copying stuff from magazines.
Okay.
And then changing words and changing comments.
And seeing that you could control things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so when you were back in Brazil, you started studying things, you got the job translating. It seems like you were always doing, you had multiple fingers in multiple pies, as the expression goes. What was your goal then? Did you have a goal other than just to do more stuff with computers?
No, learn was always my goal.
Yeah.
Even today.
Yeah.
So what happened there, I was working for another company, another company in Brazil before going to that job. There, I learned to write a little bit more of Clipper. And when I go to the company of the translation system, I decided I was able to do the translation system in a different way. So what we had at the time, it was a software that was plugged to a editor, to like Word, Microsoft Word. It was not that. It was another editor. And it was able to get the words from the editor and write words in another language.
Okay.
So I decided to build an editor, which was able to translate at the same time.
Oh my gosh. Like a word perfect type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Something before Word Perfect.
Oh god.
Yeah.
That's no big project or anything like that. No. Okay, so how'd that work out for you?
But I was young.
Of course,
I had
we all
no
need
idea
to.
The...
That's fantastic. So how long did that dream last?
No, that dream come true. So the
you actually built one?
Yeah. Yeah. It was released and was sold to a lot of people.
And it was so, you working alone?
For some time, yeah. Until I got everything almost done. Yeah, it was me in secret. And then it became a project from the company.
Oh, okay. So once the company that you're working for sort of absorbed it, and then they released it, but it was your work originally.
Yeah, but for the company, I was working there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. But what I'm hearing
nobody
you say
knew
is
exactly what I was doing, but I was working there.
So what I'm hearing you saying is, at a relatively young age, you built a word processor from scratch that was live translating from one language to another, that was released and purchased by many, 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 many people.
Yes.
Basically. No big deal. You just kind of type of thing you just do in your sleep, you know? Okay, very cool. All right. So we've talked about your work there. You released that thing. So what was next after that? I assume you worked there for a little while. You said you started there while you were in school. So what was the next big move, whether being done with school or being out with that company or geographic move? What was the next thing kind of that went from there?
No big moves. I think I went from one job to another. Mm-hmm. Because I was always seeking something new to do, something new to learn.
Yeah.
But when I was 21, my girlfriend got pregnant, so I got married.
Right.
And things got a little bit different because I was not not working for learning anymore. I was working right. for money.
For providing, yeah.
To provide. So I went to the university when my daughter was already born. Then I went worked for another company of a friend, a big friend. And then I think I stayed there for like 5 or 6 years. And then around 1998, I decided to move completely to a completely different life. And
oh, yeah.
Built a web service, web server company. We're a web host company. So there, I was in working for a company. I was trying to get into the public serving. So I was doing a concourse. I don't know how to say that in English, but you have to do a test to enter to public serving.
Okay. Like a certification?
No, it's like, I don't know exactly how to say that in English.
Okay.
It's a concourse. So you have a lot of people concurring for a position in the company.
Oh, it's almost like a competition, and you have to get a better score in an exam or something like that.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Okay.
Exactly like that. I don't know if you have that in
I don't. I mean, I'm sure we have. I'm sure that concept exists where multiple people are competing for the same promotion. I don't know if it's such a normative thing where we have a word for it, though. But that makes sense, though, what you're saying.
So I got a position. We built the company, me and Anselmo, my partner. The company was doing a lot of things, and we were also working for another company, rebuilding their system. So okay. they had a system written in Pascal. You know Pascal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I don't know it, Turbo Pascal, but I know what it is.
Turbo Pascal at the time. And we decided to go to move everything to Delphi.
Okay.
So me and him, basically, we wrote a 20 years old software to in Delphi.
Wow.
So that maybe had been our greatest move at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Because the company had a lot of clients and nobody knew exactly how to build things for Windows at the time.
Yeah.
Everybody was still working on DOS. Yep. The company had I think five or six different big softwares. Including a healthcare system built in Pascal and everything running in DOS, and we had to move to Windows because DOS was kind of dying at the time.
Right.
I think it was almost dead. So
yeah.
That was a really big move. For that move, why we decided to go in this path? Because they offered us part of the company.
For rewriting all those systems?
For rewrite the system. So we had 20% of the company, and like 13 years after this move and everything switched, the software working, they basically cuts us off the contract.
But you had 20% of the company at that point,
no,
right?
Not anymore. We lost everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That was 2013. It was exactly when I decided to go web. We were not web anymore. The whole problem was we were talking to them that we needed to go to the web,
right?
So to move everything to the web as fast as we could. because mm-hmm. everybody else was already there.
Right.
So they say to us, no, we cannot do that now, and just cut us off and end of story.
I don't want to go too deep into money issues, but if you own 20%, did they just force you to sell your shares? I don't know how that worked legally. Or was it more like of an agreement where there was a little more casual?
Yeah, that was the problem, actually. We had no contract. We had no shares. We had nothing. Man. It was basically friends doing something really big together for 10 years or 13 years. And they just stopped giving us money and end of story.
I don't mean to at all to preach in the face of something difficult you're going through, but my business partner, Dan, and I have found that since the beginning of us starting the company together, we said, you know what? We have each been burned in this similar way at some point in our lives where we go into business with friends and just hugely regret it later because, you know, because you're working with friends, you don't do the same level of like kind of protection that you might have normally done otherwise. And so what we decided to do as we started our company was to be very legalistic, even more than you might be with somebody you don't know, so that at no point do we get to a point where our friendship is kind of like on the rocks because of those tensions, because everything's so explicitly spelled out. But obviously we had that after having been burned multiple times, just like you were in that one. And so I know how that feels, although I don't think to the level that you experienced. So I'm sorry. That's not fun.
Yeah.
So how did you guys recover from that? That's a hard hit. What did you do next?
I was lucky because I had two different jobs. So
right.
The job I still have now, working for government, I had it because it will basically give me money for the rest of my life.
Right.
So I lost 50% of why I was making it at the time, but it's not really bad.
Right,
I had
not the end of the world.
To move from the apartment I was, a lot of things happened in my life, but I survived, and him too, so it's okay.
Okay, I like the attitude. So the hosting provider, is that still going on? I mean, because you've mentioned working for the government, you've mentioned working for the translation people, and then you switch jobs to other people. You mentioned these folks who you had the 20% with, but you don't anymore. You mentioned the hosting provider that you created. And I'm not always fully following who you work for at any given moment. So you're definitely still working for the government because you just told me that. Are you still doing this hosting thing?
No, not anymore.
Okay.
We had to close everything because...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the money that we were making with the other company was providing a lot of things, including the hosting company that was not very profitable at the time.
Got it.
So we closed it.
Okay. So
very fast. So.
Yeah. So I when you said hosting company, the first thing that came to my mind was you were running some servers and you were renting out shared hosting, but you've never actually said that. What sort of hosting were you renting and what sort of folks were your clients?
Exactly that. The hosting company started because we knew a little bit about internet. We saw some hosting companies doing really bad things in the market. And we decided to get one client of ours, which was not exactly that company that was our partner, and build a site for it, for him, for them. And for that, we needed a good web server.
Right.
So we learned a lot of Linux at the time, Debian Linux, built a server, got an internet connection, a home internet connection, discovered how to make things happen, to get a DNS up, a Apache mail server.
Right.
So we learned everything in like 3 months and got it up. Yeah, got it all up, and the company was online working.
You said a home internet server where you were able to get a fixed IP address, though, right?
Yes, afterwards, okay. Yeah. We started with an IP address. Let me remember. Yeah, no, we started actually. Our tests were all doing at home, but then we got an IP address in an office of a friend in downtown.
Okay.
So it was that. And after that, we moved our server to a co-location inside a data center and got right. more servers, and the thing got really big.
And so it was it just the two of you basically remoting into those servers in the co-location center, or did you start kind of having other folks working for you as well? Or
not in the web service company. It was only me and him.
Okay. So what do you use for hosting now for your side projects? Are you a Linode guy, or are you hosting your own stuff?
Yeah, I host everything in DigitalOcean using Forge, to Laravel Forge.
Yeah.
Except for my backups that are on Amazon.
Okay. I do the same thing, but it's in, I mean, I know my way around a basic Linux server and Nginx and Apache and stuff like that, but I'm not at the point where I could be running my own hosting service. So it's interesting to hear someone who has such a depth of experience in hosting still choosing, saying, you know, hey, this is the easiest way to do it. So why not, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. So that was 2013. Those things shut down. Since 2013, obviously you mentioned that, you know, the last time your the Laravel meetup was going was in 2016, and you said at that point you'd already stepped away a little bit. So what have the last 4 years been like? What have you been working on? And I mean, obviously you're spitting out packages. I'm guessing you're still answering questions on Stack Overflow, although I have not looked at how recent your most recent answer was. But what else are you up to? What are you most interested in? What have you been kind of learning and excited about learning recently?
Well, I'm learning JavaScript now.
Okay, got it.
I got into Vue.js pretty early, but I did not move my things to Vue.js. Right now, everything I do is like a Laravel backend API and a Vue.js frontend.
Got it.
So in the past 4 years, I was basically learning, doing some jobs. Some websites for one or other people or company, doing some contracting work, but everything really, really small, I think. And I think 2 years ago, we started to build things in the government using Laravel, so it got really big. I have at least 5 sites and 2 apps using Laravel, mm-hmm. 2 mobile apps using Laravel. But one of the sites is we have a voting system for young congressmen in Rio de Janeiro.
Cool.
Yeah. My company, my Assembleia Legislativa, it's the name of the company I work for. Mm-hmm. It has a program for young congressmen. So Every year we have all the schools in the state, students trying to become young congressmen. So we have a big voting at some point. I think it's July, and then they got to be a congressman for a week, doing creating bills and voting bills and. And afterwards, those bills usually become a real state bill.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Wow, that's fascinating. And a little bit terrifying, but mainly fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, but everything is done with our real congressmen. So
right.
It's cool. So.
Yeah. So you built that. So you, I assume you're using Vue Router and Laravel is really just basically spitting out the Vue initialization and then the API, but none of the front end of those applications you're talking about are actually built by Laravel, or is it more of a mix?
Oh, no, the API is Laravel. The front end usually is Vue. This one is not 100% Vue yet, because it's it has like 1 year and a half.
Uh-huh.
But it's basically Vue.js. HTML.
Okay.
And...
Cool. So stepping outside of coding a little bit, I am going to admit that I am an extraordinarily commonly ignorant American when it comes to most things, Brazil, Portuguese, and even Rio. So I've seen a couple movies. You know, I watched City of God a whole bunch of times. My sister lived in Rio for a year, and book was trans. Yeah. She's obsessed with Portuguese. When I went home for Thanksgiving a couple weeks ago, she had been at the bank after coming back from a year and living in Brazil, and she heard two people speaking Brazilian Portuguese. She walked up, she said, "Excuse me, are you from Brazil?" And they look at her like she's a crazy person. They said, "Yes, we just moved here and we're setting up our first bank account." She said, "Let's be friends." And so they and one of their friends, or one of her other random Brazilian friends, were over at my family's house for Thanksgiving, and my son does capoeira, and so, you know, he was like doing the capoeira play back and forth with one of the guys who studies capoeira. So I have this very tiny, tiny, tiny side influence that is bringing more than average amount of Brazil into my life. But I really know very, very little about the city. I know very little about the country. I know very little about the language. So as a total, just kind of like an American idiot who doesn't know anything, let's start with Rio. What aspect of Rio do you feel like if someone were to visit, they just needed to take in? Obviously, there's a couple specific tourist sites, but what aspect of living there and being there do you think is really interestingly unique relative to other similar countries that you would really want people to know about?
Yeah, I think if you are coming to Brazil, you have to try to blend, I think, because the people are the best of us. I think we are, I'll not say cool, but we are good, we are warming, I think. We love to chat, to be with people, to laugh. So knowing the city is, it's something that will happen, and will happen really fast if you know people here. Because, of course, you can go to tourist sites. It's easy to get a book and go to tourist sites. But to eat food, if you like food, to eat good food, to know amazing restaurants and not very known restaurants, you have to know people. You have to make friends here. And it's very really easy to make friends in Brazil. Really, really easy.
I like that. So talking about food, if there was one food that you would want everybody to try, what would it be?
My American boss was in Brazil last week, so I got them to eat a lamb, or I think it's that in Portuguese. There is a very, very good lamb here in Lapa. I don't know if you know the name. Mm-mm. Lapa, no. It's like it's a very popular part of the city, where you can find a lot of bars opening at night. Friday and Saturday, you go there and you will probably see it like 200 persons to 200,000 persons in the that part of the city. It's already crowded. So the lamb.
Okay. So if I were to go and I were to visit, I would need to get lamb. I would make friends with people, get to know the and honestly, that's one of the most commonly known things about Brazil, is just wonderful. And a lot of the stereotypes also have to do with parties and fun and entertainment and carnival and all that kind of stuff. So are there any stereotypes or any common misconceptions you think that people have about Brazil and Brazilians that you think aren't true that you want to dispel?
Yeah, probably the people think that Rio in particular is too dangerous to get to mm-hmm. know. Of course, it's dangerous. We are living dangerous times, but it's not like that. You can come here and you will be safe. It's right. Not like something bad will happen as soon as you touch the soil.
Got the door, so, right? Right.
Yeah, so it's safe here. It's cool. A good place to be.
I like that. Okay, so we're a little short on time, but I want to make sure that we touch into the other things that you're really passionate about. We got dancing and photography queued up. And I do want to ask before I go into those two, am I missing anything about you? Is there an aspect of who you are or what you've done, aspect, a part of your story or anything that I've just completely missed that you really want to make sure people get the chance to hear?
Not at the top of my mind and now. Okay. I don't think so. I think
Let's talk photography.
Probably, yes, but
nothing that pops
to
mind.
Remember right now. Yeah.
All right, let's talk photography. So, what got you into photography? what sort of things do you primarily focus on photographing, and how much is it actually like a really a part of your life right now? I know it has been at some point. Is it still?
Yeah, I got into photography because I love it to make photos. And I'm very, very technical with everything I do. So I like it very much to program my camera. So,
are you a manual mode kind of guy?
Yes. Manual mode all the time. So
yeah.
I love to take pictures of people. It's maybe what I do the best.
Uh-huh.
But I got known in the photography world by taking pictures of shows.
Okay.
And
like
nature.
Music shows or?
Music shows, yeah.
Okay.
I have, because of the dancing, which is mm-hmm. the other, I got to the music part of the city.
Right.
To know a lot of musicians, to be with musicians. And I have at least two great friends in music here in Rio. So I got to photograph them.
Oh, cool.
And today I think that their photos in Facebook and Twitter are my photos.
Okay.
So,
I mean, when you go just straight to your website, you see some photography right in there. Is the background of your website something? Is that a photo you took?
Yes, everything. Yeah.
That's gorgeous. Like I can't get, I mean, it doesn't look real. I assumed, even though I knew you did photography, I assume you must not have taken them because they're so beautiful. So
yeah,
I'm really impressed with this.
Yeah. You're talking about which one?
Well, the first ones that came up the last few times I went were a couple of the view of Rio from above. But then obviously, like I'm sure you're aware, it keeps cycling through photos. But these are incredible photos. I mean, do you consider yourself a professional photographer?
Yes, but I don't make money from photography.
Right. So
I have done some professional work,
right?
Three or four, but I'm not really into it. So I'm not photographing too much these days. Photography takes a lot of time. You have to really stop and look at the photo, retouch sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that takes a lot of time too. It's time consuming. So I don't have that time now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mildly offensive that you can say that you don't even have time for photography and you don't do much and then your photos are this good. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
Yes.
As someone who wishes I was a photographer. Yeah, this is really beautiful stuff. So folks who are listening, definitely check it out. Of course, all of this will be in the show notes. Okay, so do you and your wife still dance a lot?
We dance a little bit, not as much as we would like to dance.
Uh-huh.
And we are not in the dance classes anymore. We were,
okay,
like in the beginning of the year, we went back to the dance classes, but our lives are getting too crazy to be there, to get a class every week at certain time. It's hard. It's hard for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you have a family, you know, like there's just a lot of obligations that come from family and from work and everything like that. I'm finding that I haven't picked up a lot of my hobbies. You know, somebody asked in the Laravel Advent, what are your hobbies? And I laughed and I said, keeping my kids alive. Cause there's just times when, as if everybody's alive and fed at the end of the day and the house hasn't burned down, I'm considering it a win. So
yeah.
Cool. Well, we're coming up on time. So I know I said, is there any high level aspects of your story that we haven't covered, but are there any projects or any frameworks or any packages or any conferences or meetups? Or is there anything you'd like to plug, you want to talk about, or you want to make sure people know about?
I don't think so. I'm basically trying to get into my packages a little bit more. Now I'm trying to rewrite Tracker from scratch.
Oh,
because,
cool.
Because it's getting old.
Mm-hmm.
Code is really ugly to look at right now, so
yeah.
And I think I have changed like as a coder in the past years.
It's a couple years old, right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, 2 or 3 years old, I think.
Yeah,
I think it was the first big package that I wrote.
Okay.
And and got people really liked it, so I think I have to give some love to the bacteria again.
Yeah, yeah. It's this thing where we look at our old code, we can't imagine how we ever wrote like that, but it's still our baby, right? So
yes.
I like it. Okay, well, it's hard every time. It's hard to cut off talking when I have so many more questions, but I feel like we've covered a really good chunk, and we made it from at least age 14 until today, even if we probably skipped a lot of very interesting digressions we could have taken. So thank you so much for your time. It was a ton of fun talking to you. I love getting to learn about you. And thank you for the contributions you make, especially because often you're making those contributions. Again, I don't want to say like nobody knows who you are or anything like that, but you're consistently helping. I mean, the getting a good Stack Overflow score means that you have helped a huge number of people. I mean, you've helped me many, many, many times. So for the tireless work that you do helping people in our community, thank you very, very, very much.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for inviting me to this interview. And thanks for your works too, because your blog posts are helping me all the time as well.
I love it. Well, I promise that I'm going to do my best to actually get back to writing them again. I'm in the same pit as you, where everything that is anything other than the day job and keeping my family alive have really dropped. But my hope, 2018, let's get back into doing these side things and working on our packages and our blogs. So, okay, well, Antonio, thank you so much for your time. It was a total pleasure. And everybody else, see everything you need in the show notes. Just go to laravelpodcast.com, and we'll see you next time.